Hey, man. Welcome back.
Welcome
to the Super Divorce Supercast. Episode number 113. Nicholas Villar is here, a.k.a. Super Divorce, and today we're getting back into it. The first episode of the Supercast in about 8 months. Longer than 8 months. What was the exact date? The last date that a Supercast was posted was July 31st of 2023. And today is April 16th of 2024. It's been a while. It's been a little while. But you know what? We're going to kick things off in spectacular, old-fashioned Supercast fashion. Old-fashioned fashion. With a little segment I like to call Beer Me. Now, if you're not watching this on YouTube, I'm pulling out of this brown paper bag. I just pulled out a Coors Banquet beer, tall boy beer. And I'm even wearing my Coors hat. I just got this Coors hat. It's a corduroy hat. Maybe you can hear this. Hear that little scratching noise? That's me scratching the brim of my Coors cap. And it makes that kind of switch, it makes that noise. It's a big distraction, and it's a big problem. If you've got corduroy and you can't keep from scratching it, you might be in a business meeting. You might be trying to discipline your children. But you also notice you're wearing your favorite corduroy sweater and you keep, and no one can pay attention to what you're saying. You might be presenting the best business, what would you call it, presentation you ever presented. And unfortunately, you're wearing your corduroy jacket over your dress shirt. And you keep scratching at it. And everyone's trying to listen to what you're saying, and you think you're killing it, but you're unconsciously doing that. And then at the end of the meeting, you say, "So what do you guys think?" And they're like, you start looking around at each other. What do you think? Was it okay to do it? And then the main guy steps in. He was the one who definitely should have been paying attention. And he said,
I can see both sides. I think what we need to do is, and he's looking around everyone, we need to definitely hear a little more, right?
And everyone starts nodding. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we need to hear more about this. Why don't we let's get back together tomorrow afternoon after lunch, and I'd love to hear this. You could go through it again, maybe. And maybe we'll give you some, you know what? I want you to go through it, everyone, right? We want you to go through your presentation one more time, but I want you to pick maybe two or three things that you really like to dive into a little bit further than how you went into them. You say, well, okay, anything in particular that you'd like to, oh, all of it. We want to hear everything all over again, just a little more in depth. Let's get back together tomorrow and go through it. And he goes, I guess I can do that. But now you've got to try and recapture that magic because you felt really good about it, except for the fact that you're scratching at your jacket the whole time. Now, heaven help you if you wear the same jacket again the next day. What they're counting on is that you're going to come in with something different and you're not going to be scratching at it so they can actually pay attention to your presentation. Anyway, I got this cap when I was on vacation recently. Anyway, Beer Me. Beer Me is a segment where I like to drink a beer. It used to be that Bender and I would go out. We did this whole production. We called it Super Divorce Gets Beer. We would walk down to the local Ameristop near my old house, and we'd pick out a new beer each week when we did the podcast, and we'd come back, and we would try the beer on air. Now I'm going to try this one that I've had many times before, but I thought it would be nice to jump back into the Beer Me tradition and the Supercast tradition with something that I consider to be an old favorite, a familiar favorite. So I know already that I like this. I know it's good. I know it's not going to let me down, but I'm going to crack it open here, and I'm going to enjoy this while we are podcasting this afternoon. Even though it's not the afternoon anymore. Coors Banquet has a special place in my heart. Going back to the days of a band called Sleep Star Ignition, which morphed into Super Divorce at a point. But we did this big, big show one time at the American Legion in Lebanon, Ohio. And you might hear me say that. It was a big show. You think you had a big show at the Legion? Hey, brother, Taylor Swift selling out where the Kansas City Chiefs play, and you think you had a big show? Yeah, for me, it was a big show. Speaking relatively here, it was high energy. It was cram-packed, full of peeps. And we had unlimited Coors Banquet. We had these, trash cans, those big Rubbermaid trash cans filled to the brim, overflowing with ice and Coors Banquet beers. So much so that when you bought a ticket to get in the show, it was just have at it. Have at thee. Have all the beer that you want to. And we had a lot left over, believe it or not. I mean, it was a packed house. People were having a good time, had some good bands. There was a little bit of weirdness that occurred at one point. We brought in some local creatives, some writers from the area to get up. And you may not think this sounds very punk rock, but we're just trying to do something a little, you know, kind of fun to include, you know, the artists in the area. And we said, hey, you know, you got some writing, come and share a little short story or whatever. And I think it was that show. It might have been another one. We did several at the Legion. I might be getting mixed up. All I know is that there was a story that one young lady read that was extremely graphic when it comes to things of a sexual nature. I seem to recall someone being penetrated with objects that they did not want to be penetrated by, in holes that you usually don't want penetrated in general. And I recall a hush coming over the audience and feeling very unnerved by the whole thing. And I'm not a prude, but it was an oddity. I will say that. It was an oddity to see. You know what? There were going to be horror stories, I believe. I think it was kind of like a horror-themed event. Had a little bit of like a Halloween-y flavor to it, if I recall correctly. And so I was thinking, oh yeah, cool, spooky stories. That'd be neat. And then this lady reads this treatise on orifices being violated, and it was not so good. But we had lots of Coors Banquet there, and that kind of evened things out, and I had a lot left over, and I drank it for a long time. Anytime I wanted beer, I just go to the Rubbermaid. And, you know, so Coors Banquet, it's a great go-to, man. It's a great go-to. It's brewed with 100% Rocky Mountain water in Golden, Colorado since 1873. It's been around a while. And on this can, they even have an Uncover the Banquet Legacy QR code that you can scan. And it's signed by Mr. Coors himself from Golden, Denver, Colorado. It's a nice can. If you're watching on the internet, on YouTube, you can see it's a nice can. It's a nice looking tall boy. They take pride in their design over at Coors Banquet. And that's, you know what? It's interesting that I like Coors Banquet because I cannot really stand Coors Light. Never liked it, never been a fan of it. But the first time I had Coors Banquet, I said, now that's a beer. That's a drinkable beer. And that's how I feel about Coors Banquet. It's look, if you never had it before, it's better than Bud Light. It's better than Budweiser. It's better than Miller Lite. I like Miller Genuine Draft quite a bit. When you're just talking about your sort of old-fashioned domestics, we're not talking about hipstery 5,000 gallons of whatever crushed up pine cones that they put in them to make them taste like they do with the IPAs. Not talking about that. I don't even like those. You can take your IPAs and you can shove them right up your butt. That lady at the show should have written a story about that, where they take all the IPAs and they shove them up the guy's butthole because they're not worth anyone's time. IPAs. I like lagers, dark beers, golden lagers, blondes. These are the kinds of things I enjoy. Stouts. Drinkable beers. Not beers that make me feel like I'm guzzling household cleaner. Or that I'm guzzling the spritz that you spray around your Christmas tree to make it smell like a real one when you got the fake one. I always get the fake one. I can't tell you the last time I had a real Christmas tree. It's been ages and ages and ages. I don't know if I'll ever get one again. I might not. Anyhow. All right. Let's jump into the podcast proper. Now that we've gotten Beer Me out of the way, we've beered up with a Coors Banquet. And I've got some notes here with some topics that I'd like to cover on today's episode. Supercast number 113. That's what we're up doing here tonight. I told you that the last episode was July 31st, 2023. It's been a while. And I hope to... I always say, oh, I'm going to try and get back into the swing of things and make sure that I get out more than one of these a year. But I got to keep myself held to account. I don't have millions and millions of people who are going to be getting after me on social media if I don't post when I say I'm going to. And so when I post a Supercast episode, I'm glad I did it. I'm always happy to get on here and shoot the shit with myself. It's fine. If for no other reason than to sort of do like a verbal journaling. That's what it feels like sometimes. I suppose sometimes they call that a vlog. But being able to talk out my thoughts, my recollections, to actually speak them with words and then record them and put them up. There's like a record of it. So it's almost like a diary. It's a journal of sorts. And so it doesn't feel like a complete exercise in sort of delusional self-aggrandizement. Oh, all these people want to listen to what Super Divorce has to say. I mean, I'm glad that, you know, if I get 20 views on one of these things, that's cool. That's fine with me. I'd be happy if more people listen to it. All I'm saying is I've got to keep myself on task because at this point, not many people are going to do that for me. No one's going to be poking me in the head. No one's going to be coming up behind me and scratching me in my corduroy hat saying, hey, where's that podcast you said you were going to do? So anyway, I'm going to try and do a better job getting these things up here when I know that I should. You know, and sort of in that same realm, let me say this. I don't want to make a bunch of promises about all these different video ideas and concepts that I've got brewing around in my skull. But I do have some cool things in the works. Right now, if you could see the rest of my office, it's an absolute disaster. I've got multiple videos in the works. I've got things just scattered all over the place that I'm using for videos, things I'm recording, ideas I'm writing down, and I'm just picking up things and I'm putting them here and I'm putting them there. I'm going to use that in a little bit. So I've definitely got stuff that's being worked on. I'm not going to say it'll be done by this date or that date, or this project will be done by this date or that. I'm leaving it up in the air. I just want you to know that I'm working on stuff that I think is pretty neat. And I hope to get it up here sometime soon. Okay? That's all I'm going to say about any of that stuff for the most part. Maybe I'll say more later, but right now that's all I want to say. I mentioned I got this cap, this Coors cap. It's a blue corduroy cap, baseball cap. And it's got Coors in the classic cursive logo. It's got that classic Coors logo in white stitching. And then above the Coors, it has the mountains, the Coors Mountains, where they brew. Well, I don't know if they brew the beer in the mountains. They get the water from the mountains. I think that's how it works. Brewed with 100% Rocky Mountain water in Golden, Colorado. So they're showing those mountains up on the hat, up above the Coors. And what that means is the mountains are above the Coors. The Coors would not exist without the mountains providing that fresh Rocky Mountain water. And so that's how they have it stacked up there. Mountains, Coors, hat. For you to wear it around and spread the word of Coors. I got this hat when I was out on vacay. Went with the family to Florida first. Visited the grandparents. Had a good time doing all that kind of stuff. Had a scare with my grandfather while we were down there. He actually had to go to the hospital. And they did a very quick... They really got on the ball getting him in for a very quick surgery. A quick turnaround time on that to clear his arteries. He had a major blockage in two spots. And they luckily took care of him before any heart attack, before anything really bad happened. But it was kind of an urgent situation. In fact, I had... just sat down for dinner with my wife and my son and a couple friends. We were going to do a trivia night. My wife's uncle does trivia at a country club down in Florida. And we went out there, just sat down. They had just brought my beer to me when we got the news from my grandma, who was back at their condo, saying that my grandpa was being taken to the hospital with chest pains. So I ended up having to leave like immediately. I let my wife and son stay, who didn't want to freak him out. I went back to be with our other kids at the condo because my grandma and grandpa had taken our two youngest sons so that we could go out and have, more grown-up night, just hang out a little bit, because everywhere that we had gone, we'd had to take the baby and then the five-year-old. And when you do that, when you got all the kids, that can be a bit of a jackpot. That gets into jackpot territory. When you want to go out to eat, you got the toddler, the five-year-old, and then, the 12-year-old, he's fine now. He's not causing any problems when you go out to eat. That's why we took him with us. And the two youngsters were going to stay home at the condo by the beach with grandma and grandpa. And like I said, as soon as I sat down, got the beer, put down on the table, ring, ring. Can you come back to the condo to watch the two youngins because grandma's got to take grandpa to the hospital? So that's what I did. And then let everyone stay at the country club to finish their meals and to not freak anyone out. I went back to the condo, stayed with the boys, and luckily we got the news pretty quickly that they were doing surgery. They did the surgery, got everything taken care of, and he was out of the hospital the next day and back at the condo and down at the beach. So, I mean, it was an impressive turnaround time on that shit. That's quick and effective work right there. So, tip of the cap to the medical staff involved in that whole operation, in figuring out what was wrong, diagnosing it, getting the damn surgery done, and then getting him back on his feet and back home, back to the beach. Impressive stuff right there. And so, yeah, impressive stuff. Thank the doctors, thank the Lord that things went so smoothly. As smoothly as the situation could have gone. You couldn't have asked for a better outcome given the circumstances. So that was good. That was an eventful day there, day or two. The rest of the time was pretty relaxing. We didn't go to any of the big theme parks. We didn't do that stuff. Just one of those vacations where you want to go and just kind of chill. And we tried to do that as much as we could. However, when you're taking three youngsters on vacay, it's only going to be so relaxing. It can only be so relaxing when you got the toddler and the 5-year-old and the 12-year-old and they're wanting to do stuff and then they're bickering with each other. They're fighting with each other and you got to break it up and you got to keep the noise down because there are other people around and you know, it can get to you at a certain point. Here's another thing that kind of... I don't want to say it makes for a bad time. I'm just saying there are certain things you miss. When you're out on a family vacation, you can't just go to the beach and sit there and drink all day. That's out of the question. When you go down to the beach, you're going to be chasing a little baby around. You're going to be taking the kids out into the water so they don't get swept up by a big ass wave, so a whale doesn't come by and snatch them up and you get in a Jonah and the whale situation. You don't want to do that. You don't want dolphins swimming by and one of the kids try to grab on and take a dolphin ride. You got to make sure stuff like that doesn't happen. You got to be on top of things at the beach. You know what else you got to look out for at the beach? This is something that pisses me off. The bike riders. I got a big problem with the bike riders at the beach. I don't like it. I don't like the bike riders at all. Because it seems like they think it's ridiculous that people dare go to the beach who aren't riding bikes. They don't seem like they give two shits about slowing down for anyone. There was a time where... And they come up so fast because they're zooming their asses up and down the beach. Just fucking zooming. And so I was down near the water with the toddler. He's toddling around. And, you know, it's like I'm keeping an eye on him. I don't keep a tight grip on his hand constantly because I want him to be able to explore a little bit. But, you know, he turns and starts walking back up the beach, away from the water, back to where everyone was sitting at the chairs and the towels and such, where the family was. And he turned around before I did. And I turned around like a second later to follow him. And one of these dickheads is just zooming up. And I had to snatch my little baby up so that he wouldn't be run over. And I feel like the guy on the bike would have just plowed into him. I feel like the guy on the bike, the beach biker, badass beach biker with those big ass fat tires they have. They gotta have the big fat tire bikes. that they probably rent from a local dispensary. You know, just fucking, just booking it. Absolutely booking it like a bat out of hell. And it was irritating. I didn't scream at the guy or anything. I didn't try to chase him down and tackle him. But I wondered to myself, how many people probably get injured at the beach every year by these people who think that the entire beach belongs to them? This is their personal bike track in the sand. I would like to be able to see the ocean tide as I'm doing my cycling. I would like to see the waves crashing and the pelicans. I want to see the seagulls while I'm biking. It'd be fine if they paid attention. It would be fine if they didn't act like the entire beach belonged to them. But that's how they act. And it pisses me off, and it's wrong, and I think something should be done about it. And what do I think should be done? I don't know. But something. The something could be as simple as a PSA. Signs posted when you're walking onto the beach. Remember, cyclists, pedestrians have the right of way. But I'm not surprised at any of this, because we know that cyclists, whether they're on the beach or they're on the fucking road, they think it all belongs to them. Everyone needs to bow down to the cyclists. The world is theirs. The road is theirs. Your car belongs to them. And you need to use it in a way that they see fit. The road belongs to the cyclists. You ever come up behind one of these guys on like a two-lane highway out in the country, and they're just cycling in the middle of the fucking road? Some of these guys, some will make a little attempt to get over near the edge of the road. Some guys just, oh, I know that the speed limit on this road, 60 miles an hour, 65. But you know what? I'm going to pedal my ass right here in the middle of the road doing about 15. And if someone comes up behind me, I hope they stop. It's their job to slow down for me on my cycle. As if we have not created places for these people to take their bikes. And it's never like a homeless guy with a straw hat Willie satchel over his back, a train jumping looking fella. It's never one of those guys on like an old Huffy or an old mountain bike with rusted wheels or spokes splintering out this way and that, poking out, chains rattling, cans dragging behind him. It's never a guy like that, because that's what people are, oh, not everyone wants to drive a car. Not everyone has access to a motor vehicle. It's never people who you look at and say, that guy has no other mode of transportation. It's always some dickhead on his fancy ass bike, strutting that ass. He's got the spandex, like the Lance Armstrong outfit. He's doing like a Tour de France cosplay. All the professional gear, the get up, the fucking fingerless gloves, that stupid pointy helmet that goes back, the shades, the $5,000 Ray-Ban reflective shades. You know, all that shit. All that stuff obliterated by one person who has seen enough. Or one person who's not paying attention. That's the hubris of these people. It's like they show no fear. I would be terrified to go cycling on a road such as the ones I always see these people cycling on. I would be petrified. There's no way. You couldn't get me out on one of those roads on a bike. Because I know how awful people are at driving. I know how little people pay attention. Not midgets. I'm not talking about how little people pay attention. Midgets, they probably pay attention quite well. That's not what I meant. I know that people in general don't do a very good job paying attention in life. And when they're doing that, when they're not paying attention and driving a motor vehicle, that's a recipe for danger. And it's doubly so when there are bikers, cyclists on the road. They need to take their little bikes and they need to go and cycle them on one of those fancy ass bike paths that we've built for these people to use. But they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. They want to strut that ass, strut that ass, strut that ass, strut that ass, strut that ass. Fuck them. That's what I say. Anyhow, the trip to Florida was pretty good. And then, this is all driving, mind you. I mentioned that we had the three kids with us on this trip, this entire trip. The first leg of the trip was purely kind of vacay. We drove my big van, nice old-fashioned conversion van with the lights inside, and got the TVs set up for the kids to watch stuff. Though half the time that wasn't good enough. They're still bored, even though you got a million DVDs for them to watch. They got Nintendo Switches. They got books to read. They got toys to play with.
I'm bored. Oh, Father, I'm bored. Father, when will we be there? I'm bored. Are we almost there yet? Are we almost there, Father? I'm bored now.
No, we're not almost there. We started driving 20 minutes ago, and we've got to drive 15 more hours. That was about the first part of the trip. From our home down to Florida to where we were staying, to my grandparents' condo. I feel like that was about a 15-hour drive. And then we left Florida after about a week, and we drove up to Philadelphia. Along the way, we did stop on that trip. We stopped in, Fayetteville? I think we stopped in Fayetteville at an Airbnb, which was pretty nice. They had a pool table. Got to shoot some pool with one of my boys, the older boy. We stayed up pretty late. We were shooting pool. What else did we do? We watched some music videos. I was showing him some classic new wave music videos for fun. And then we watched some James Rolfe videos. We watched some old James Rolfe, like home movies that he made. Because my son really likes making movies. I was like, well, you'd probably like some of these old James Rolfe films. Because he started making those really early. Just using a VCR to edit on old VHS camcorder. That's how James Rolfe started making his movies. So we watched some of those, like The Head Incident and Snicks, stuff like that, which are pretty fun. I like all that kind of stuff. Just cheesy, schlocky, good times. And then we left Fayetteville and we drove our asses to Philadelphia, where my wife worked at the WWE World Convention all week leading up to and then through WrestleMania. And then the convention ended the Monday after WrestleMania. The Raw after Mania. The day of Raw after Mania was the last day WWE World was going on. That was the last day she had to tattoo at the convention. But that was an interesting trip. Let me tell you what. Because we got to Philadelphia. Very cool city. It feels very unsafe. I did not feel safe walking around Philadelphia. I didn't want to do much of that. Not the best vibes. I'm just saying, a lot of a lot of trash strewn about, and we stayed in a pretty nice part of town too. I think, I mean, it was right by their city hall. The buildings are beautiful, fantastic architecture. And I guess once you get inside certain places, it's fine. But it's just like being out and about in the world seems like, you know, there's maybe a high likelihood of running into some people you don't want to run into. And I know they've got a lot of crime. They've got pretty bad crime stats in Philly. So I was just trying to, be smart. I didn't want to be a hermit, a scaredy cat hermit, and stay locked inside all the time. But being unfamiliar with the area, not knowing which parts were quote unquote safe versus unsafe, I was just trying to keep my eyes peeled and just trust my gut and be like, all right, maybe I don't walk down this street. Maybe I should go this way instead. I did go to a few pretty cool places in addition to the WWE World Convention. We went to this market. It's called like Reading Market, something like that. You walk in, it's like this huge, sprawling, like if you took all of the restaurants out, it'd just be like a huge kind of, almost like a warehouse type feel. Now, how do I describe this place? I'd never been to anything like this. Okay, imagine going to a flea market, but instead of shops, it's all restaurants. It's all restaurants. It's all like a peddler's mall, you know? And it's like every row that you walk down, there's all these different eateries. And it's a bit more open air than like a traditional flea market. I'm referencing a flea market because of the sheer number of different vendors that were in this place. It had a really cool vibe, cool lighting. All of the eateries were very unique looking. Lots of neon everywhere, I feel like. It was just a really cool place. And we ate a few times at that place. Got a few different eats and treats, some pastries, stuff like that. So that was a neat place. And then I took the boys to the Macy's right near our hotel because I thought that would be nice. It was like, oh, we'll take them to Macy's. They got the Toys R Us in there. Big fan of Toys R Us. That's the only Toys R Us experience you get these days is when you go to a Macy's. So I took them to Macy's, let them walk around, let them try. I was going to let the guys pick out a toy each. Didn't even get to. Because the young toddler that I've referenced a few times just started screaming at the top of his lungs. For no reason. I don't even know what set him off, but he's doing this shit now where the slightest thing will send him into just like a complete meltdown. And he's at an age where you can't reason with him because he's just he doesn't even know what you're saying yet. I mean, he's starting to get certain things and he can speak some words, but it's like, if I were to look at him and say, now, buddy, won't you tell me what's wrong? He can't do that. He's just gonna scream louder. I'm just pissing him off. So he started doing this screaming shit and I tried walking him around the stroller a little bit, taking him to a corner of the toys area that was like more secluded. He wouldn't stop. So I'm like trying to show him stuff. And then this lady walked by, snooty old lady. You could just tell she was just she was a cunt. This was a cunty woman. You know what she said? She did this thing. She looks over and she goes, what'd she say? I remember exactly. She looks over with this kind of, you know, that kind of face. She said, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. You know, with that kind of head shake and the nostrils kind of flared and oh my goodness, you know, as if I don't know. And I looked this lady and I said, no shit. No shit. I said it two times. I gave her two no shits. And she just walked off. She didn't say anything else after that. And then I got the boys. And I was like, we're going to have to get out of here. We're going to have to go back to the hotel room. This isn't working. And it was the same kind of deal with the WWE World Convention. We got to go to that the first day that they were open. And luckily, that was a day where it wasn't super busy. It was the day that The Rock showed up. So we got to watch his address to the crowd, which was pretty fun. We got to see The Rock in person. And we were only able to do that because the toddler fell asleep in his stroller while we were pushing him around. He had a meltdown and he tired himself out and he fell asleep. And then we were able to stand there and wait. Luckily, because The Rock was like 2 hours late. It was a big controversy when it happened. Nobody left, though. Everyone waited. Shows you the drawing power of Dwayne Johnson. He was supposed to take the stage at 4 p.m. for his little press conference deal. And he didn't show up until like right before 6 p.m. So that was something else. But we waited, and that it was fun to see. It was cool to be there and experience that. And then we left and went back to the hotel. And that was the only day we went to the convention. Because I didn't want to deal with toddler boy screaming his head off, having his meltdowns. So for that week that my wife was tattooing, up until night two of WrestleMania, that's the night that I actually got to go. I took my oldest son. We took the subway, pretty much a straight shot from our hotel, which was right by City Hall in Philadelphia. One of the nicest hotels I've ever stayed in, by the way. And like I said, fantastic architecture, really cool. It seemed like the area right near our hotel wasn't too bad. But as soon as you walk like a few streets over, and I'm not saying that homeless people are going to attack you just because they're homeless. It's just you don't know who that guy is. And you know people get desperate. So that's an unfortunate thing being in a city like that, especially if you're not familiar with it. I don't want to be... here's another thing. I think tourists often stand out. Tourists can often stick out like a sore thumb. Some people are watching for tourists. And even if you're not going to get confronted and suffer some sort of physical assault, there are pickpockets, cut purses out there who are just looking for the marks. That's where that term comes from. It's one of the ways that it's used. But it's someone who can be picked out and taken advantage of. Someone who wanders into town. They don't know their way around. You can just see them. You can see the way people look around sometimes. You see it when you work retail. You can always tell who needs help. Someone who walks in, you know, this guy has no clue what he's doing. This guy just walked into GameStop and he's never played a video game in his life. He has no idea what's going on. He needs your help. That's a good thing to pick up on when you're a retail worker. And it's good as a customer when the retail worker is able to pick up on that, because then they can come and they can help you. Sometimes people don't feel comfortable walking up and asking for help. So if the retail worker can see that, then they can come up and initiate for you. And you don't have to feel like a big stupid dummy. But when the criminal notices you're not from around here, you don't know what's going on. You don't realize you just wandered into the bad part of town, buddy. And now we're going to have a little fun with you. Now we're going to take your wallet. Now that cell phone is no longer yours. It's mine. And so that's why I said I didn't want to do a bunch of wandering around. But the area right outside, the walk over to the convention center, it wasn't too bad. I will say this, and it made me feel downhearted a little bit. There was one evening when I was I was taking some trash down to a central trash dispensary on one of the floors, on the mezzanine level, in fact. I got off the elevator and I just took a wandering mosey down the hall there. I was looking at some of the artwork. They had nice artwork put up, and you could see some of the conference rooms, just peering in to see what they look like, you know. Just generally checking things out. They had some nice light jazz playing in the background. Down below there was a bar. You could hear light tinkling of glasses and conversation, and very pleasant. But then through these big, just ornate windows that they had, looking out onto the street, I looked out there, and right across the street on the corner, I could see homeless people, like, in sleeping bags. And there was one guy who had, like, a little burner set up somehow, that he had found a power source and was, like, cooking food, like, sitting down there with all of his stuff in his bags. And it's like, no one's running them off. But it was a strange juxtaposition to be in this very nice, cozy, comfy hotel, and then to look outside and there are people who can't even, well, this guy was eating, one of them, but, you know, the other guys, who knows? Who knows when they had their last meal or when their next one was coming, or anything like that. It was just, it gave me a strange feeling, you know? I didn't feel like, it's not necessarily guilt, because to be there, to be at this place, to get to a position in life where, you know, our family can get up and, well, my wife was working that convention, so that sort of enabled us to go there and do that. But everything that led up to that point, there's been a lot of hard work and sacrifice, and you think of all the work that you put in to get yourself and your family to that position where you can make that kind of thing happen. That's something to be proud of. But still, seeing someone else who's in such a different position and is obviously struggling, is just, you feel bad for them, you know? You want to help. Unfortunately, you never know what the people's stories are. Sometimes some of these stories are completely tragic, and it's just like bad luck event after bad luck event that leads people to these positions. And then sometimes people of their own accord just throw their lives away. You never know what it is, and you never know what people are doing with the help that they've been given. And I know that from personal experience in dealing with one family member in particular who just basically threw it all away and had, I mean, just chance after chance after chance extended to them, and you just see them choose to do the wrong thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again until they've used up all of the goodwill that people were willing to extend in their direction. Because at a certain point you become a sucker and you're enabling someone's bad habits. I don't want to go into detail too much, you know, but drugs were involved, and sometimes even like the most expensive rehab clinic in the world in the most beautiful location is not even enough. And they'll go right back to that thing, and you can't do anything about it. You can't do anything for that person if they're not willing to make the change necessary to put themselves on the right path. And sometimes those are the people that you see out on the street corner. But like I said, sometimes it's just absolute tragedy that leads a person to that position. And I hope that all those people are able to get themselves on track. The unfortunate truth is they're not all going to. And so, how do you come out of that? I urge you, watcher, viewer, or listener, to just make wise choices. Do the things in your life that are not only going to make you happy and fulfilled, but they will also benefit you and benefit those around you and make your community and your world a little bit better for you having been here when it's all said and done. I think that's a good thing to shoot for. None of us are going to be perfect, but you know, you can aim upwards, as a wise man says. Now, that Philly trip, what else about it? Stuck in the hotel room for most of the time because of the little ones, because of not knowing the area, not knowing where it was safe to go and where we should stay away from. And being in that room, they did a good job of something. My boys did. They did a good job of something. And that good job they did was that they convinced me to stay far, far away from the tiny house. See people moving into these tiny homes. It's basically like, it's not even a trailer. It's like you split a trailer in half, like a traditional trailer at the trailer park, and you split it in half and you move in there. We have everything we need right here. We don't need a house. We can stay in one room, and it's very efficient, and my recliner folds out into a toilet, and the bathroom sink doubles as the shower, and I've got this 2-foot gap up, there's like a platform and a 2-foot gap that I can get up there and I can squish my way in and sleep up there, almost like I'm entombed in the night. That's what people are doing with these tiny homes. And they make it look cool sometimes. Sometimes on like HGTV, you'll see these features, these exposés on the tiny home. And it looks nice. And they come up with all these different inventive ways to cram everything you need in one room. Some people are living in like a broom closet, you know? Oh, well, no, you don't need all that space. That's a myth. We've been fed a pack of lies. We don't need homes. We need tiny homes. Well, you take 3 kids and your spouse and you stay in one hotel room for a week and see how you feel afterwards. And I'm not saying everyone needs a mansion. I don't need a mansion, but I'm glad that I have some space here. I'm glad I have an office that I can come into and do my stuff. I'm glad my wife has an area to do her drawings and to work on her business. And I'm glad the kids, I'm glad they've got their rooms and they've got room to play and all this stuff crammed into one hotel room for a week. That will convince you that the tiny house is a lie, at least for a family, I think. And maybe someone out there has done it. Maybe there are people out there doing it right now with like 10 kids in a tiny home. God bless you. But for me, no. My lived experience was that being in a tiny home with my particular family would not be enjoyable in the long term. People would start going nuts. People were going nuts, not just me. You can't take children who are used to having you know, like a yard to run around in and all this kind of stuff. And then you put them in there and you can't go anywhere and you got to be quiet because there are people down below you. There are people up above. There are people next to you. It's a different dynamic. So when WrestleMania Sunday came and I was able to get out of the apartment for a little while, or the hotel room, it was like being released from, from a dungeon almost, stepping out into the light. It was a nice day. WrestleMania night one, people were complaining. The crowd was a little quiet. We watched night one on TV, on Peacock, and it seemed like the crowd was a little hushed, but we did hear it was pretty cold in the Eagles stadium that night, at the Link, as they call it. Lincoln Financial Field, I think, is the name. And it seemed like the crowd was a little hushed, but that's because you usually don't have wrestling events in the cold. At least it didn't rain or anything like that. That would have been a nightmare. But it was a cold evening. When we went on Sunday, on night two, and got to experience probably the most incredible ending to a WrestleMania that's ever happened. WrestleMania 40 there, with all the run-ins, with John Cena showing up as a surprise and The Undertaker showing up as a surprise. That was something else. That was really cool to see. I'm glad that my son got to experience that in person. I don't think it'll be a memory he soon forgets. So I'm glad that I was able to take him there and be there for that live in person. It was a fantastic event altogether. Really cool setup. Great vibes, great energy. I think that the Philly crowd, it was a great city to host a big-ass wrestling show like that in the stadium. I mean, it comes across really well when you see the footage back on when you're watching videos on YouTube or on the WWE Network. It recorded very well. It looks really neat. And in my mind, when I'm imagining being there, like I still see all of that, and the feeling of being immersed in it is very real. Still, I could still feel it. That was awesome. That was awesome. The show started with a bang, ended with a bang. All the stuff in the middle was pretty good, or great. You go from pretty good to great all throughout that show. Great program. So it was nice to get out of the hotel, take the subway. It was very easy to get there. I was a little worried when I was thinking that we're going to have to take the subway. I was imagining in some other situations when my wife and I have traveled in the past before the kids, you know, being in like Chicago or being in Boston or when we went to New York and riding the subway and you're trying to get to certain places. And it's that complete mark out of towner tourist, you know, malfunction occurs. It was like, this isn't how I get around. I don't do this. I don't ride a subway. What do I do? You have to look up at the board, you know, and they show the different train lines and like, okay, which stop do I need to get off on? And which fucking one am I going to take from there? And like, sometimes you gotta get off the train like three or four times and hop on different ones. And to the people who live there, it's second nature. To someone who lives in the city, they hear me saying this and be like, stop being a pussy. It's a fucking train. You don't know how to read a map and see which... Yeah, I get it. I do. Okay? But there's a nervousness. There's a nervousness. I got us to the field. I did it. But I was saying it was nice because we just had to get on the subway and ride it straight to the last stop. You couldn't have fucked it up. Because everyone gets off there. It's like the last stop on that particular train line. And then getting back afterwards, it was like a straight shot back. I knew which one we took the first time. Just had to take the train back there again. Easy. But the nervousness before actually taking the train, before seeing where we're going to have to go, was, what if I mess up? What if I get us on the wrong train and it takes us across town and we're running late? That would be a nightmare, because you're a big stupid out-of-towner dummy who's not used to taking the train. You drive yourself everywhere. If it were an event happening in Cincinnati, I would drive myself. You know? Why didn't I drive us over to WrestleMania? I don't like driving in big cities like that with a huge van. I've done it plenty of times in my life. I used to have to do it when I was touring back in the old Great American Beast days. Did it multiple times. Not just with a van, but with like a 15-passenger van and a huge trailer attached to the back. That was nerve-wracking. The first time I had to do that, driving in New York City. Awful. Awful. And that's why I took the subway. I couldn't imagine trying to find parking. Where am I going to park my big-ass van? I barely fit in the parking garage that we ended up parking in. The clearance was like right there. I had like this much space above my van. So that was harrowing. We got it done. Paid about $500 in parking to be there for, what, about a week? That's nice. That feels nice. When you're leaving, you got to swipe your card, scan your little ticket, and then it gives you the total. That'll be $500 for letting you park your van over there. Not even the in and out. I didn't even get the in and out option. It was like, park the van, left it, came back to leave. $500, baby. Pay up. Pay up the old parking garage, man. Whatever. It was fun. Worth it. Worth it. Got to see WrestleMania. Got to see the Tribal Chief defeated. Got to see Cody Rhodes finish the story live and in person. Never forget it. I'll pay your $500 in parking. Okay? You can have it. So that's what I've been up to, guys, over the course of the past several weeks. Very eventful. It's been a very eventful time in my life. I'm just trying to get my cadence and my rhythm back. Being home, had to come home, get the yard in order. The grass was overgrown. You know, we had someone watching our house for us. You know, she did a good job, but I didn't have her like mowing the lawn and doing all the sort of maintenance and upkeep. So you got to get all that stuff taken care of. You got your end of trip laundry to do, getting all that caught up, getting everything tidied, unpacking, putting away all the unpacked shit. It's a real shit show coming home from a trip, isn't it? That's probably, it's nice to be back. You breathe that sigh of relief. You thank the Lord for being able to arrive back home safely. But then you look around and you're like, fuck. Fuck. Put all this shit away. Fucking bullshit. But you do it because you need to, you know? But now we're back, and we're getting back to the Super Divorce swing. I'm going to get some videos going. I'm going to get some stuff uploaded. I'm going to be honest with you. December of 2023 took a toll. That Madvent series took a toll. I got so far into it, and it just felt like none of the games were fun. And I started to feel like before even halfway through, that it was going to be a slog. It was like, I've committed to this series of games for the entire month of December, and I can tell already that most of them are not going to be enjoyable. And I'm not trying to be a shitlord. I know that, look, people are trying to get their foot in the door in the gaming community, in the indie horror scene. And so they're putting these games out. And they think, oh, I'll put it in the Madvent series. Or they're, you know, I'm guessing you have to enter submissions and they pick the ones they want to include in the series. And I'm not faulting people for doing their work and then submitting it. I was expecting the curation to be a little better, to be honest. And I was expecting the games to be a little better. It was like so many of them like weren't even Christmas or holiday themed. It was like, I thought the deal was that it's like Christmassy, holiday themed horror games. And I suppose I was mistaken in that. But it didn't help ease the blow. Realizing that didn't help ease the blow. I had already committed. You get to like day number 10 and it's like, I'm not digging this, man. But I'm not going to do 10 games or 10 days of it and then throw in the towel. So the majority of December was spent making videos that I didn't want to make. And I tried to go through and just do them anyway. And I think that's, people talk about burnout. I think that's when people get burnt out, is when they're making shit that they don't feel like making. You can go to McDonald's and work and put together hamburgers that you don't feel like putting together. You can fry fries that you don't feel like frying. You can take orders that you don't feel like taking, and it's fine. You make your minimum wage, you clock in, you clock out, you go home. When you're making videos, or if you're playing music, if you're doing something creative, and it's not just like, it's not pure laziness where it's just like, I don't feel like doing anything. I want to sit and eat cookies and watch my favorite TV show today. Like sometimes you need a little bit of a break to reset, recalibrate, get ideas flowing again, but you can't do that forever. I don't think that's burnout. There's a difference between burnout and laziness. Laziness is what I just said. Laziness is like, there's actually something you've been thinking about doing. It's like, oh, there's that video that I want to make. I know what I should be doing to make it today, but I'm just choosing not to do it because I'm being a piece of shit. That's different than, I'm making this series that I just feel absolutely no connection to, and I'm trying to like fake my way through the process, and you're never going to get magic doing that. And I think people can tell. I'm sure people could tell when I got to the end of the series, towards the end of the Madvent series this year. And after December, I don't think I uploaded anything for quite a while or even wanted to go live. And then I started going live a little bit here and there. I was doing some of the potato gaming on the handheld, on the analog pocket. Just doing something I felt like doing that was fun. And then we did the Cry of Fear. I was like, okay, I can commit to this. Let's just do a playthrough. And then you start building back up again. Feeling that surge, getting those ideas going again. It's like, okay, all right, chugga chugga choo choo, let's get back into the swing of things here. Let's try to get back up and running at full Super Divorce speed. That's my goal right now. But pumping the brakes, I'm not going to make a bunch of promises and say, here's the new schedule. Here's when this and this and this and this. Not doing that. But I am in the background holding my own feet to the fire and saying, let's get some shit going here. Those ideas you got, Villars, let's make them. Let's make them come to fruition and let's get them up. Let's do it. That's what we're doing. That's the lay of the land right now.
And what is that? About an hour and 10 minutes we've been going here. I think that's a good little... That's a good little... What do you fucking call it?
Reacquainting. Sticking the toe in. Sticking the tip in. Just wetting the whistle a little bit.
We're not going to come back in here and drop a 10-hour extravaganza for the first Supercast back. But, this is good. This is good. This is good. This Coors Banquet beer is good. And what I'm going to do now, when I wrap up here, after I get this video uploaded, this podcast uploaded, what I'll be doing is continuing to grab some gameplay footage for the next Super Divorce review. In the Super Divorce review series. Featuring, you know, your vignettes and your fun little sidebars and such. Number one in that series, of course, was Iron Lung. And then we did Night at the Gates of Hell. And then the Lost video. Number four is being worked on. That's one of the projects. I'm not going to give you a release date. Not telling you when it's going to be done, but footage is being grabbed and a script and so on is being worked up as, not as we speak right now. I'm not working on it at the moment, but generally speaking, yes, it is in production. Okay? That's what's up. If you haven't done so, if you're watching on YouTube, please sub to the channel. Bong the gong for notifications so you know when new videos go live, so you know when I go live. Comment below. Even if it's not related to the video, you got a question, concern, you got a request, a type of video you'd like to see, a game you'd like to see reviewed, a game you'd like to see live streamed, let me know. Comments below. The comments section is your oyster, so crack it open, slam it down your throat, and wash it down with a nice tall frosty mug of cocktail sauce. You can follow me on X, Twitter X, at Super Divorce, on Instagram at Super Divorce Band, and I play music from time to time. If you'd like to check out some Super Divorce tunes, add some new tunes to your mix, to your playlist, your favorite playlist, you can find Super Divorce streaming on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, wherever you stream your horse shit. You can find Super Divorce. Just type in Super Divorce. Click on the song you're choosing. And if you don't like it, try another one. And if you don't like that one, well, try another one. And then another one. Again and again and again until you find one you do like. Because I believe there's a little something there for everybody in the Super Divorce catalog. And that's going to do it for now. So, until next time, everyone. Take real good care. Keep kicking ass. Love you lots. Lord willing, I'll be back very soon with another Supercast for you to watch and or listen to. Bye-bye.
We can go viral with this one.